Good morning. Welcome to the House Judiciary Committee for this 2012 session. The clerk will take the roll. A quorum is present, and we will proceed. We don't do roll.
Representative Szymanski, present. Representative Mazzarol,
here.
Representative Johnson.
Sheldon Johnson.
Here.
Representative Allen.
Representative Allen will be here shortly. I just saw her in the hall.
Thank you. Representative Diane Anderson.
Here.
Representative Champion. Representative Cornish.
Here.
Representative Grunhagen.
Here.
Representative Hillstrom.
Here.
Representative Kreisel.
Here.
Representative Lane. Representative Lesh.
Representative Lesh will be here shortly.
Representative Liebling.
Ditto.
Representative Shoemaker.
Here.
Representative Smith. Representative Straczynski.
Here.
Representative Vogel.
Present.
Representative Wardlow.
Present.
Thank you. A quorum is present. Again, welcome to the Judiciary Committee. We've had some changes on the committee, and at this time I would like to introduce our staff. To my right is our committee administrator, Ryan Blodgett. Ryan comes to us this year having previously served on the Capital Investment Committee. Our CLA is Brian Tice. Okay. Brian has served as my LA for the past year and has taken on the duties of a committee legislative assistant. We also have Vice Chair Pat Mazzarol joining us at the head of the table this year. And welcome to all three of these gentlemen. And we also have two new members on our committee as well. We have Representative Chris Wodzinski joining us and Representative Susan Allen. If I may impose on you for just a little bit of introduction on yourselves, Representative Allen, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself? Or?
Thank you, Chairman. I'm Susan Allen. I'm a newest member of the House. I'm from District 61B, which is South Minneapolis. And our area is an area where we have the highest number of children living in poverty. I think about half of our children live in poverty. It's a very diverse area. Many minorities. It's a minority majority. It's a Somali, American Indian, Latino, African American. Very politically active community. And so I'm looking forward to serving on this committee. And my campaign was all about working for social and economic justice. And I'm an attorney, so this is an area that interests me greatly. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Allen, and welcome to our committee. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chris Swidzinski. I represent 21A down in southwest Minnesota. It's Redwood County and Lyon County. I farm, own a small welding business, have three young kids and a wife. And we're just happy to be able to serve on your committee and hope for a good session. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swidzinski. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I want to congratulate you on chairing the committee. Look forward to working with you on the issues before us. And welcome also Representative Swidzinski and Representative Allen serving on the committee. Just a couple process questions. Representative Smith, I've worked with him for many years here at the Capitol. Do you know if he will be on the committee or not be on the committee for our information?
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Yes, Representative Smith is still a member of our committee.
Okay. And then when we were talking yesterday, you mentioned that we would be a committee rather than a division. And then just so we understand on this side, is that the case and we'll be treated as a committee rather than a subdivision of public safety? Is that your understanding?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate your help and look forward to working with you.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Johnson. At this time, we will move to the approval of the minutes. Representative Grunhagen moves the minutes of the previous meeting.
Sure.
All right. Okay. Is there any discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nay. Those opposed say nay. Minutes approved. Okay. Chair would now like to bring up Senate file number 373. Representative Wardlow will be presenting Senate file 373. Do I have a motion to bring Senate file 373 before the committee, Representative Wardlow?
Mr. Chair, yes, members, move Senate file 373 to bring it before the committee. I'd like to draw your attention and bring before the committee an author's amendment.
Okay. Okay. Representative Wardlow.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Wardlow moves the motion to discuss that Senate file 373 be passed and be sent to the General Register. All in favor say aye.
Mr. Chair.
Pardon me. Oh, sorry. I'm a rookie at this. Forgive me. So.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could get some clarification. The motion is to send the bill to the floor. Is there a reason this bill doesn't have to be heard anywhere else?
We were acting on a Senate file. This bill was previously heard in the other House committees in 2011 session. And the House file was heard in this committee and other committees. Representative Wardlow, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, the author's amendment, the A12-0561 amendment, bring that before the committee, and I have an oral amendment to make to the amendment before we put it on the bill.
All right.
This amendment,
Representative Wardlow, please present your oral amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, on line 1.5, strike the language beginning at open parentheses C through just before the comma and insert in its place open parentheses B, close parentheses. On lines 1.7 and 1.8, reinstate the language that was stricken. Renumber the subsequent subparagraphs accordingly. On lines 2.1 and 2.2, strike those lines in that language. On line 2.3, designate that as subparagraph B. On line 2.7, strike the language occurring or. That is my oral amendment. This, I move that.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Will Ms. Pirius please repeat the oral amendment for all members so we have clarification on this?
Mr. Chair, on line 1.5, delete C or D, comma, and insert parens, B parens. Reinstate lines 1.7 and 1.8 and renumber the clauses. On page 2, delete lines 1 and 2. And line 2.3, delete the C in parentheses and insert B. And on line 2.7, delete occurring or.
Okay. That is the oral amendment before us. Is there any discussion on the oral amendment? Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, just
since it's our first meeting here today for the year, I just want to comment on this because this, as an oral amendment, I think everyone would agree that it's a pretty extensive oral amendment. And I opened my folder this morning, and I've just got the committee rules here, and obviously one of the committee rules is that minor oral amendments will be accepted during hearings at the discretion of the chair. Now, you know, there's been a lot offered here as an oral amendment, and obviously it's an amendment to an amendment, and I'm not sure exactly what's left, and I hope that Representative Wardlow, I assume he'll be telling us what's left. But, you know, I think it's a little bit difficult to start as a precedent for our year that this is a minor oral amendment. So I just kind of wanted to bring that to the chair's attention, because obviously the minority will be at times also looking to offer oral amendments. So I just think it would be so preferable if we could just simply get the amendment in the shape in which the author wanted to offer it without having to go through all of this.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Liebling. So noted. Representative Wardlow, did you have any comment?
I can go through the oral amendment and discuss what it does to the amendment and the purpose of it and what's left. The oral amendment simply reinstates the lines on 1.7, 1.8, the contract language, so that the statute of limitations for contracts is reduced to 4 years from 6 years, along with the following causes of actions listed in the following sub or clauses. And the only other thing it does is it carves out the statute of limitations for torts that constitute domestic abuse to keep that at 6 years instead of reducing it to 4 years. We heard testimony last year that domestic abuse victims might not be ready within a four-year period to bring forward a cause of action, and because of that significant policy concern, we want to, and I think it's appropriate, to carve that out and keep torts constituting domestic abuse at 6 years rather than moving down to 4 years. The different policy considerations apply there as opposed to the other sections. That's what the oral amendment does. And finally, to clarify that this change of the statute of limitations will be prospective only, we're deleting the words occurring or, because I think those words are confusing. It's not clear to me when a cause of action occurs, but it is clear when a cause of action, or it's more clear, when a cause of action accrues. A cause of action accrues, generally speaking, under Minnesota law, when an incident that causes some damage, but perhaps not all damage, occurs. So this change of the statute of limitations will only affect causes of action arising from incidents that give rise to the cause of action that are after the effective date. Hope that's helpful.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Seeing no other comments, we will move to a vote on the oral amendment. Pardon? Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wardlow, in light of your last comment, I have a question. What if I'm being progressively defrauded by, my insurance company? Maybe that's a bad example because that might be qualified under contract. But I'm being progressively defrauded by someone that falls under the gamut of what this legislation intends to. And he starts suing me, and he starts defrauding me, and it's not worth it to sue the person. But as it happens over and over the course of, say, it gets butts right up to the edge of the time where statute of limitations expires, suddenly it's like, you know what, he's defrauded me of enough money, now it's worthwhile to sue. Well, now my window to sue him has shrunk to almost nothing, and I can't get my act together enough and hire counsel and do that. Is that when some damage has begun to accrue, that you just stated, does my time in order to recover justice start tolling at that point? And what happens if all of a sudden it becomes worthwhile for me to sue right up until the 4 year point that you've marked here?
Thank you, Representative Lesch.
If I need to clarify that, let me know, because it might have been confusing.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. I would remind the committee that all questions be directed to the chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesch. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesch, your question is clear. I would point you to what is Clause 6, now Clause 5 as renumbered, regarding fraud. And fraud is a little bit different. In cases of fraud, the action doesn't accrue until discovery by the aggrieved party of the fraud. So that makes sense, because the nature of fraud is concealment of wrongful acts by the defrauding party. So, first of all, the discovery rule applies. Secondly, to address your larger concern, it is my understanding that under Minnesota law, generally speaking, and in for most causes of action, the time period within which you must commence suit begins when the incidents giving rise to the cause of action occur and cause some damage. Or, in the case of fraud, when a party discovers those incidents have occurred and the damage has occurred. So the reasoning there, the policy behind that, of course, is to give potential defendants the ability to have some certainty going forward that they're not going to be hauled into court long after events that may or may not constitute fraud or some other kind of tort or breach of contract have faded in memory, witnesses having disappeared. So this encourages reducing the statute of limitations from 6 years to 4 years. We encourage suits to be brought sooner, and we encourage people to bring suits during a time frame during which the relevant facts that the court will try are fresher in memory, evidence is more readily available, and thus justice is better administered, and the result will be more fair.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wardlow, would the same result occur if it was, say, theft and not fraud?
Representative Wardlow.
Representative Lesch, let's see, theft. Well, there would be no discovery rule with theft, I don't believe. The discovery rule applies to fraud, so there's that difference, but otherwise it would be the same rule.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative
Wardlow, then, if someone's stealing me over the course of that time and I discover it right up until the four-year time and it finally becomes worthwhile for me to sue to get the money back, am I out of luck?
Representative Wardlow.
To recover in a civil action for theft, I wouldn't say you'd be out of luck, but you would be encouraged, again, to bring the suit within 4 years, such that the facts relevant to the alleged theft would be more fresh, justice would be administered, and we wouldn't be hauling people into court to testify about things that have faded, wrongly remembered. So this advances the administration of justice, fairness, and, by the way, this is a jobs creation bill backed by Minnesotans for tort reform, and by increasing certainty for businesses and other potential defendants, we allow them to plan for the future, to expand, and to incorporate, to better anticipate litigation costs related to their activities.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have two more questions. One being Representative Wardlow. How long has the current statute of limitations law been in place?
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesch, I don't have an answer for you on that one. But I can certainly get back to you with that information if you would like me to.
The reason, maybe
Representative Lesch.
Have somebody.
Mr. Chair, maybe a staff can.
We will request.
I bet you there's someone in this room who knows, Mr. Chair.
So. All right.
Oh, I understand. House Research may have an answer.
He'll look.
Soon.
Pardon me. Ms. Perius, did you have information, or she's searching for information? Representative Lesch will.
Okay.
Well, delay
Mr. Chair,
the question.
I think I know the answer, but I'm not sure if I know.
which is why I need confirmation, but I think it's been in place since statehood. And I'm wondering why, if the statute of limitations was good enough for the founders of this state, they thought 6 years was appropriate, why is it that we know better now? What has changed?
Representative Wardlow, would you like to answer that one?
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, Representative Lesh, thank you for that question. And thank you for asking only questions to which you know the answer. That's a good rule in general. There is a significant difference between how we communicate, how we record information, how we travel, and how we handle our business and personal affairs as between statehood and 150 approximately years later now. Now, with electronic communications and cars, things move much more quickly. So 6 years may have been a reasonable statute of limitations when things had to travel by horse and buggy, Pony Express, and people had to travel to talk to each other in person and then later perhaps by telephone. But that is not the situation now, and so I think a change to the statute of limitations to reflect the new technologies and reality of life in 2012 is change is overdue.
Well, Mr. Chair, just by way of
Representative Lesh.
Thank you. From my experience, Mr. Chair and members, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And I don't think because we have smartphones, suddenly that means that someone is aggrieved more quickly than they were since statehood. And I haven't been presented with enough reasons of why we should put consumers in a snare here because suddenly we think they should know quicker than they used to. Or should be aggrieved quicker. So I'll be voting no, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Wardlow.
Lesh, appreciate your comment. With regard to consumers, just like to note that by moving the statute of limitations on contracts from 6 years to 4 years, we actually help out consumers because consumer debt would also fall under the 6 year the new 4 year statute of limitation.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually have a number of questions. You stated that the bill will improve the Minnesota jobs climate. How many jobs is this going to create?
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Of course, we can't predict with great precision how many jobs any particular bill will create. All we can do is foster a climate that is conducive to private sector job creation, as conducive to an opportunity society. What we have in Minnesota and many other states is what some have called the tort tax. The litigation environment in a state affects business substantially and affects the choice of businesses as to where they will locate, where they will expand, and it also affects entrepreneurial activity. If we increase certainty for businesses by reducing the statute of limitations, we reduce costs businesses have for planning, and we make it easier for businesses to plan for future litigation costs, which will be lower. And we make Minnesota a more attractive place for businesses to move, or for a person to start a business, or for businesses to grow. So while I can't sit here and tell you exactly how many jobs something will create, I would simply remind all of us that government does not create jobs. People create jobs. Minnesotans create jobs. People that move to Minnesota hopefully will create jobs in the future. And more people move to Minnesota to create jobs if we have a better litigation climate. So we can move in that direction and use logic and sound reasoning and history as our guide and look to other states and see that when you implement very sound common sense tort reform measures like this, you're going to bolster private sector job creation. And it doesn't matter. That's just sound reasoning and logic. The fact that it's difficult to put together a peer-reviewed study to look at the question of how many jobs will be created by any particular tort reform measure in any particular state does not mean that a tort reform measure will not lead to a better business climate and create jobs. And I think far too often at the legislature people say, well, how many jobs will this create? Or argue on the basis of studies and statistics as if studies and statistics are the only thing that can substantiate the policy behind a bill. So thank you for the question.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you. Well, I believe that numbers can actually enlighten us as to how it will improve the business climate. So why don't you tell me how many civil actions have commenced between years 4 and year 6 in the last year in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. I don't have a number to give you, but I can certainly look into the question and come back to you with that.
That
perhaps if that is even a statistic that's available.
Representative Hillstrom.
I question whether that would be useful use of anyone's time, but
thank you, Mr. Chair. So even if the last year isn't absolutely available, in the last few years, the last 5 years, any of those would be helpful. If this has been the statute of limitations since statehood, I think that there should be some data out there somewhere. So then, based on the fact that we don't have that number, it's very difficult then to tell me how many suits actually would be impacted by this change. So could you maybe give me then a single example of how moving this statute of limitation would help? Is there a particular case that is super troublesome to you that has resulted in you wanting to do that? So maybe you have even just one example.
Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Well, like I said, sound reasoning and logic leads to the conclusion that this is a reform that will create jobs. Now, there has been a study recently done by the, NERA Economic Consulting, October 26, 2011, and I don't have it. You don't have it in your packets, but I can. It's available online, I believe, and you can email me, and I'll certainly get you a copy if you want to. And it actually does a study and looks and makes projections as to job creation related to tort reform and potential reductions in tort costs for each state, and also potential increases in employment. And it gives a range. So there is some data out there now, that, and this is a good study, and it shows that with certain tort reforms in place, Minnesota would see a potential increase of employment from somewhere about 0.5% to 1.2%. That's just one study, and it isn't talking about any one particular kind of tort reform. It's looking at a number of different reforms. But that just goes to the general point that tort reform does improve the business climate and create jobs. And this statute of limitations reduction is one of the simplest reforms we can do. And it also moves Minnesota to a place where it'll be more in line, our statute of limitations will be more in line with other states.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, actually, I would beg to differ, and I actually think we heard testimony that said that civil litigation in Minnesota was actually down 40%. And it's my understanding that the Chamber of Commerce has said that Minnesota already has the 11th best business climate relevant to litigation for business in this state. And I just want to note that if we go to 4 years, it would make Minnesota much lower than the rest of the country. And Kentucky, for example, statute of limitation is 15 years. So I just want you to know that your numbers would be helpful because we can all have reasoning that says something is going to happen, but sometimes people have flawed reasonings, and a lot of times examples and numbers clearly show us what the unintended consequences might be. So, Mr. Chair, I think there's some public testimony that wants to happen, and I am going to want to make a statement as well when it comes time to pass that bill, to vote on this bill. So, you know, I'll stop asking questions right at the moment, but I'd like to be called on again.
All right.
Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You, Representative Hillstrom. We will proceed, you know, with the oral amendment to the amendment. Representative Wardlaw.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. With regard to, thank you for your comments, Representative Hillstrom. I would just say that this is a Chamber of Commerce priority, tort reform is, and if we indeed are number 11, it would be better if we were number 1. I think I said that last year in this committee, and perhaps other committees as well. So this has been substantially vetted already.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We just need to make sure we don't make it number 1 at the expense of Minnesota citizens.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Since we started to wax philosophical here and seemed like sound reason and logic leads us to assume this will create jobs, doesn't sound very, sounds rather faith-based to me, but let's just assume it does, then we would basically be allowing businesses to, quote, anticipate litigation costs over the needs of the aggrieved. Should there be fraud, injury to a person's or their rights, detaining or taking or injuring their personal property, or neglecting to discharge a trust, those things will be subimposed underneath the need for a business to anticipate litigation costs. I find that outrageous.
Mr. Representative Wardle.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lane, thank you for that comment. Quite the contrary. This bill not only helps businesses anticipate and future litigation costs will be lower, but also it ensures that justice will be more swiftly administered and that cases will be brought to suit more promptly, so that persons that are aggrieved by actions that constitute causes of actions listed here in the bill will go to court with evidence that is more fresh, with memories that are that don't need to be refreshed by recollection through recollection and other extraneous evidence, and we will have fairer results for litigants. So this aids fairness and the administration of justice and improves the business climate. It's really a wonderful bill. So thank you.
All right, Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, I could wait until we've adopted the oral amendment because we are
thank
a little bit ahead of
Liebling.
Ourselves here.
I appreciate your consideration. All right, at this time, Representative Wardlow, would you like to move the 812 amendment as orally amended?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move the 812 amendment as orally amended.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. All right, Representative Wardlow, is there any?
Well, Mr. Chair,
I think present your bill.
I think we've covered Pardon. The bill. In
Representative Wardlow, may I interrupt?
Oh, sure.
Now Representative Liebling is ready to ask her question.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also wanted to comment about the statements that have been made here about improving the business climate, because yesterday many of us attended an all-day conference at the University of Minnesota, the One Minnesota Conference. And we heard from a number of people about improving Minnesota's business climate, including a woman by the name of Kim Nelson, who's with General Mills. And she spoke about the things that she views as important for Minnesota's business climate. I have to say I heard nothing the entire day about tort reform as one of those priorities. I'm really pretty surprised, to hear Representative Wardlow talking about, basically, what I heard him say is, I know it because I know it. And, you can say, I don't believe in studies, I don't believe in numbers. That's a pretty shocking thing to say. Are we really? Especially yesterday, I don't know if Representative Wardlow was there, I think he was. We heard a lot about the data. We looked at the data. We thought about the data together. And now here today, it's we know it because we know it. And I think that's a really poor basis for public policy. The one question I have, Mr. Chair, is whether
Chair,
this
if
is...
Mr. Chair, I might address the first part of Representative Liebling's comments before
Mr.
we get to
Chair,
the question.
Okay. The question that I have, Mr. Chair, is whether this is one of the bills put forward by ALEC. American Legislative Exchange Commission, which is that business, the industry-sponsored group that puts forward model legislation in the states.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wardlow.
Liebling, I have no idea if this resembles any ALEC model legislation. I don't believe it is an ALEC model bill, but I don't know. It certainly wasn't any consideration of mine with regard to this legislation, if it is. I don't even know about it. So that has nothing to do with anything relevant to this hearing or this bill. Now, with regard to your first comments, to be clear, I didn't say that I don't believe in studies, but I do appreciate the fact that you used the word believe there, because as you know, as we all know, studies can be manipulated and numbers can be manipulated in many, many different ways to show pretty much any result that the person presenting the study wants to show in most cases. So you do have to take a study, any study with a grain of salt, and there is an element of belief. When you look at a study, as people generally find the studies that support their positions, I find. That usually happens around here, and I think that's just human nature. So studies are helpful, numbers are very helpful, and can be very helpful in certain instances, less helpful in other instances. And I did not say that I don't believe in studies. They're certainly useful. Now, I also believe that reasoning and logic, starting from a premise and looking at other minor premises, making a syllogism, that kind of thing, can lead you down a path to a conclusion that is sound. So we shouldn't discount reasoning, and it's not to reason your way from a precept to a conclusion is not to take something on faith or just to believe in something for the sake of believing it. It's one part of the analysis that we all go through when we're looking at public policy, oriented towards our fundamental values and based on our most fundamental principles, all of which we take on faith or belief, because no one can prove to me what is good, what is not good. That's just something we know innately. So thank you for your comments.
Representative Liebling, any further question?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, I think our positions are pretty clear here. I think that what I just heard again is I know it because I know it. And, you know, that's good. It makes us all feel good that we know what we know, but it doesn't make for very good coming together around policy, and it doesn't make for very sound policy. So obviously we have big differences in this committee, and, you know, I think that we'll all do better in this very short session if we can, instead of putting out divisive policy that we want to push forward because we know it's good, just in our hearts we know it's good, that we can perhaps come forward with policy that we can all come around because we can see the evidence for it, and we'll all work better together if we can do that in this very short session, where the most important thing is to improve Minnesota's economy. I go back to the comments of Kim Nelson, who I think was very impressive to everyone who listened to her, and nothing was said about tort reform that I recall. I think if this is of concern to business, I think it's very low down on the list, and I think we would be better spending our time on other matters.
Thank you, Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, this is a chamber priority.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow.
Supported by these almost 60,000 members of Minnesotans for Law Suit Reform as well, so it's not. The support is broad-based, and it's not divisive. Bipartisan support.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, I think maybe the ALEC question should be addressed to Representative Stramansky, as I believe he is one of the liaisons from Minnesota to the ALEC. So when you want questions about whether or not there are ALEC proposals this session, you might want to address them to the chair.
Very good. Hearing no further questions, we will now take testimony. And on our agenda, we have Mr. Joe Carlson. Would you come forward, Terry? Okay. And if there was anyone else in the committee room that would like to testify on this bill, please sign up with our committee page. Good morning, Mr. Carlson. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. And our members represent consumers and businesses who have been harmed by the misconduct, negligence, or fraud of others. And we come to the legislature frequently to support legislation that improves the legal climate for consumers and businesses, and we universally oppose legislation that simply provides safe harbor for someone for their negligent or fraudulent conduct. And we think that Senate File 373 is one of those measures. We strongly oppose this, not only because it takes away an important right that we've held since 1848, 10 years before statehood. We've had a six-year statute of limitations, unfettered, without change, since 1858. But But more importantly, even though it's a right we've held since statehood, it's not based on any evidence of a problem in Minnesota. You know, Minnesota has one of the best and most predictable legal climates in the country. It is administered by competent judges, and justice is dispensed by sensible jurors, the people that vote for you. That's who's making decisions about what these cases really are about. And when you look at the facts, civil filings in Minnesota are down 40% since 1987. 40%. There is no rash of litigation in Minnesota. The Center for State Courts did a study of 15 states, and they recently released their study, and they found that 73% of the civil cases in Minnesota are conciliation court and contract claims. Torts, less than 3% of our caseload in Minnesota. That's from the Center on State Courts. When you look at, and somebody referenced it, the lawsuit climate put out by the United States Chamber of Commerce, Minnesota consistently ranks high by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. In the most recent report, we were ranked as number 11. But when you delve into the report a little bit, they say these are the most important issues for state policymakers to consider, for them to consider when they're looking at improving their litigation climate. The statute of limitations and interest on judgments is not even in the top 15. It's not even listed in the report. And one of the things that we are noted for, we were sixth best. And by the way, this is compiled by corporate counsel around the country who rank their states where they do litigation for their corporate clients. In Minnesota, for the timeliness of summary judgment and dismissal, which is how quick can I get this resolved if it isn't a case with merit or if there's a way to dispense with the case quickly, Minnesota ranks sixth in the country for business for dispensing of civil litigation. I think that that is a significant statement about the work that this committee and this legislature has done as it relates to our lawsuit climate. You know, also, and probably heard yesterday, Minnesota, our unemployment rate, 3 points below the national average right now, 3 points below. We have outpaced our region and the state in job growth. And I know that because I went to Governor Pawlenty's campaign speeches frequently, and we frequently talk about it. Minnesota has a climate to create jobs, and it is not related to a bad litigation climate, and nor does this bill address anything related to litigation. And as Representative Hillstrom indicated, there isn't a single case in 2 years we've been here on this bill, not a single case that didn't have merit that was filed in years 5 and 6. Not a single one. No one has come here to testify and say, I had a frivolous case filed against me in year 6. It really didn't have merit, but I got sued. That has not happened. There isn't any rash of litigation. In fact, when people are ready to go to court, they want to get to court and get it resolved. That's when they're ready to resolve a case. The reason Minnesota has enjoyed a 6-year statute of limitations for so long is that we do not recognize a discovery rule, with the exception of fraud. And the reason why we have fraud, Representative Lesh, is because of a case called Marvin Windows versus PPG. You maybe remember the governor called a special session to create an exception in our statute of limitations for fraud because Marvin Windows' case was dismissed within that 6-year window. That's why we have that exception for fraud in Minnesota. And so we don't have any evidence of why this is needed or what it will create. So what do we know? You know, we know that these bills are model legislation that are advanced to the states by the American Legislative Exchange Council, the American Tort Reform Association, and I can tell you, because I have it with me, when they put out their tort reform boot camp, all of the issues that you're talking about are all on the ALEC agenda. Post-judgment interest, class action reform, reducing the statute of limitations. These are all model bills that are written in Washington, D.C., that have no relationship to what's going on in Minnesota, that are written by insurance companies and big corporations in Washington to insulate their liability to not be held accountable from consumers. And how do they back that up? They do it with front groups like Minnesotans for Lawsuit Reform. It used to be called the Lawsuit Abuse Watch. These are all funded by big companies. There's no grassroots movement here to have it, and they back that up by telling you about frivolous cases and a rash of litigation. And I have to tell you that even thinking about it makes me sometimes lose my cherub-like demeanor. Because one of the cases we've talked about a lot, if I came and told you that there was a company in Minnesota that was injuring people and they did nothing about it, they knew about it, that their product that they sold, over $1 million a day of that product, caused scalding burns on people, they didn't do anything about it. When you told them that there were over 700 cases where they had scalded their own customers, and they said, because of we're so big, that number is statistically trivial, you'd be outraged. If that happened to you, Representative Grunhagen, and that burn happened to you or your family, you'd be outraged. You and I have talked about this case. This is a McDonald's case that everyone thinks is the poster child for frivolous litigation. You know, I brought with me, and I'll give a copy to Representative Wardlow. These are the cases that people think are frivolous. These are the burns that Stella Liebeck suffered from McDonald's coffee. And I want the committee to look at them.
Mr. Carlson, please bring those to the chair before distributing to the committee.
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't think anyone can look at those pictures and look at those burns and say that that is a frivolous case. And it is appalling and I think outrageous that we are taking away our rights based on this myth of frivolous litigation where nothing could be further from the truth in Minnesota. And, you know, Mr. Chairman, as you look at the bill, it is unfortunate that it is driven by a myth that is not based on any reality in Minnesota, when our courts are doing a good job, our jurors do a good job, and this is simply to benefit the insurance companies who can cut off their liability 2 years quicker, and maybe next year it will be 2 years more, and that's all that this is about. This has nothing to do with a litigation crisis in Minnesota or our job climate. It has to do with cutting off liability for people who are responsible for it. Mr. Chairman, I would also tell you that whatever information you want to look at, Minnesota is not out of line with other states as it relates to the statute of limitations. And quite frankly, the amendment that you approved, which I was disappointed to see, Minnesota will now have one of the shortest statute of limitations as it relates to contract claims. One of the shortest. This is an unfair bill. It's unfair for consumers, and it is not based on anything in Minnesota, and I urge you to vote no. Be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to put on your awareness, whatever, we'd like a roll call on this side of the aisle, just so you can make note of that.
A roll call has been requested.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Carlson, I guess when I talk to folks that I represent, they're most interested in it. When I try to explain this to them, it gets pretty complicated. But what they really want to know about is how's it going to affect the individual? How's it going to affect the consumer? Because this is a judiciary committee. We are interested in the extent to which an individual can come to the court and get their grievances addressed. And what would be the thing you'd say to the person at the door when I talk to them as to what this change can do for their situation?
May I remind the committee that the subject here is the judiciary and not the civil law aspects of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. And Representative Johnson, you can't take a third of time off the statute of limitations and not believe that it has an impact on the judiciary. Either people are going to have to rush to the court quicker when they're not prepared, or they're going to be denied their right to court when they later discover. We do not provide for a discovery rule in Minnesota, and I'll give you an example. It was in Representative Johnson's district. an elderly gentleman had his daughter terribly injured in a car accident, and he settled the case with the insurance carrier for the driver that caused the accident. And then he went on to care for his daughter. And he kept paying his own car insurance, and he forgot to pay his car insurance 1 month, and he got a cancellation notice from his insurance company. And this is 5 years after the accident that injured his daughter in his car. He went to a lawyer in South St. Paul, and he said, I don't want my insurance to be canceled. I'm happy to pay. I'll pay double. I need my car insurance. So he got to talking about what had happened. He found out that he had substantial underinsured and uninsured motorist coverage on his own policy that they never accessed 5 years after the accident. You take this down to 4 years, and that claim for that person is gone. It wasn't that he slept on his rights or, you know, I'm just going to delay that as long as I can. He didn't even know about it. His own insurance company never even told him that he had that substantial recovery on his own insurance policy. Under this bill, you would have to tell your constituent that you have no access to court. That's wrong. And there are very few cases that come in those 5 and 6 years, but for the people that need it, it is critically important. To no detriment to anyone has that law been in place since 1848.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. quickly respond to a few of Mr. Carlson's comments with regard to the last thing you said. Perhaps the injured party there could find a claim for fraud. Perhaps there was some material failure to disclose information on the part of the insurance company. I don't know. But it's not clear to me from your description of the facts that there wouldn't be some kind of cause of action there that could survive. Now, perhaps that's not what happened. But
he never made a claim against his own insurance company. They have no duty to tell you that we may owe you something. They have no duty. They didn't.
Well, I don't know the facts.
They weren't
case,
even.
And I don't know
involved
whether.
Gentlemen. Yep. Please address the chair.
That's
with your comments.
The point
okay.
is that anecdote doesn't say much about this bill. Likewise, these pictures are very striking, but no one is indicating that this bill would affect the claim that the victims of the hot McDonald's case brought. And clearly the probative value of this is outweighed by its prejudicial effect. So,
all right. Thank you.
It's an interesting Wardlow. Thing, but not so relevant.
Okay. Representative Lesh, did you have another question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Mr. Carlson. You cited a list of groups that whose purpose was to trim lawsuit abuse. That group, Lawsuit Abuse Watch or whatever, do they still exist?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Lesh, yes, they do. I believe Representative Wardlow referenced them, the Minnesotans for Lawsuit Reform. It used to be a different name. The head of it is the head of the Insurance Federation, Bob Johnson. He's been here to testify in support of these bills in the past, and they still exist.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Lesh.
I just didn't know that name. And so Lawsuit Abuse Watch, there was nothing to watch. Maybe that's why they changed the name. I'm wondering, Representative Wardlow, what would you say to that man that Mr. Carlson referenced? If you were responsible for carrying this bill and he had no cause of action because he couldn't read through all the fine print and understand his insurance policy, but he doesn't have a cause of action now, and he's left holding the bag. What would you say to him?
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. I'm not familiar with the facts of that particular case, so it's very difficult to say what I would be useful to say to him. If I was his attorney, I would find a way to get him some relief.
Representative Lesh.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but not as an attorney, Representative Wardlow, but as the legislator who brought this bill forward that curtailed
that man's cause of action where he didn't have access to the courts anymore. If you weren't asked as an attorney, but just knowing the information that Mr. Carlson cited, you would have no option for relief. What would you say to him?
Representative Wardlow, and I may remind the committee that, you know, let's not be working from speculation. Let's work on the bill before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I would say, I don't know that's particularly relevant here, but this is what I will say here, is that this bill encourages litigants to bring their cases forward sooner, and it encourages litigants to be more aware of what their insurance documents say and what kind of coverages they have, and to be more aware of the contracts they enter into, obligations they enter into, and it aids the administration of justice overall. And that's what we're talking about, public policy affecting the whole state. So that is the goal.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Lesch,
in regard to your comment about speculation and how, you know, Representative Wardlow's comment, this isn't relevant. Well, it's this committee's job to speculate. That's why we're here. The difference between the courts and the legislature is the courts deal with situations or events that have happened in the past specific to a person or incident, and the legislature deals with prospective application of laws that are going to impact people as the years toll on. And we've all received phone calls from constituents asking why they can't get relief in a certain situation, and a lot of times they'll want free legal advice or free staffing advice because they want this situation resolved with the legislature because they couldn't resolve it for the courts. That's what happens a lot of times up here. So I would beg to differ. It's absolutely our job to speculate about what could happen, and I wonder, each one of us around this table, what we would say when we get a phone call like that, because most of us have gotten that type of phone call, not with respect to this situation, but with respect to other situations, and it will happen in the future. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know that it sounds like this is just a buyer beware market. You better read your own policy. We're talking about people who don't even know they have a claim. This isn't even thinking about your insurance policy or that you even have it. We're talking about people that don't know their claim. We don't recognize the discovery rule generally in Minnesota, and that's what we're talking about. And I think Representative Wardlow appropriately responded as a lawyer and as a person to what he would do when confronted with this new bill. He would try to find a way around it to find redress for the constituent. Why are we going to pass a bill that we're going to have to find our way around to get adequate redress for our constituents? That makes absolutely no sense when there isn't a single case that you can point to with an evidence of problem. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Carlson. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? Okay. Seeing none, will Representative Wardlow will renew his motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a final comment. As an attorney, it is the job of every attorney to zealously advocate for their client. And I wouldn't try to find a way around a law, but rather you look for avenues of relief that are available and you search them out. So that's what any good attorney would do. This bill is concerned with increasing certainty for potential defendants and businesses. Just because Minnesota doesn't rank low in terms of its litigation climate doesn't mean it can't be improved. And we need to bring relief and foster job creation for the thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Minnesotans who are out of work. This bill moves a step in the right direction. So with that, I renew my motion.
Thank you. We have a question from Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, this was the statement that I told you earlier that I wanted to make before the bill passed. Members, I went and have Senator Newman's comments from April 15th in the Senate Judiciary hearing regarding some of these product liability type cases. So this isn't on this particular bill, but these are some of Senator Newman, a Republican's, comments. And I think they're really important for you to hear. When he spoke, he said he wasn't speaking because he wanted to protect lawyers. He's not a lawyer, and he's not trying to protect lawyers. I believe that's what he said.
He is a lawyer.
Oh, okay, he is a lawyer, but he's not trying to protect lawyers. So then I'm going to read his exact words here. It's a form of product liability where you bring a claim for money damages because there is a product out there that isn't good for you, or it is going to harm you, or it is dangerous. And in terms of civil cases, if we add up all of the civil cases in Minnesota filed in a given year, I believe you will be looking at under 5% of the total number of cases filed. And that includes product liability cases, automobile cases, premise liability cases, medical malpractice cases. It's a very small number. He went on, and then he said, the first is the address of injuries of wrong. Our Constitution says that every person is entitled to certain remedy in the law for all injuries or wrong for which they may have received to his person, property, or character. To obtain justice freely, without purchase, completely, and without denial and without delay, conformable to laws. Let me speak a little more. Constitution, which provides the filter that is this kind of case that you're concerned about, is spurious lawsuits and frivolous lawsuits bought by nefarious lawyers, and that the filter is, he says, that the filter is the right to a trial by jury. That what our Constitution says is that a right to a trial by jury shall remain inviolate and shall extend to all cases at law without regard to the amount in controversy. Lawyers do not decide damages in civil cases. Judges do not decide. Juries make that decision. Let the people of Minnesota decide whether or not these are meritorious claims, or whether they are not meritorious claims. But as soon as you pass this bill, again, he was talking about another bill, there will be a set of circumstances will arise that you had not anticipated, to Representative Lesch's point, and that you are going to prohibit somebody from exercising their constitutional right of redress. He then used the hot coffee case as an example. And he says, oh yes, there are costs that are incurred when we go to litigation. But I will remind you that at least under the way our Constitution is written, it does not say that you have a right to redress unless it's going to cost a lot of money. It does not say you have a right to redress unless the legislature takes some type of action. It says you have a right of redress, and this bill prohibits that constitutional right. Those are some of his statements. He talked about these tens of thousands of dollars of attorney's fees and expert witnesses that people talk about that are extreme and expensive. And he says spurious lawsuits do not come forward when people are investing those kinds of sums of money. They are legitimate claims because they are on the hook for lots of money. And he stated, I candidly cannot describe for you, in my entire career, a single frivolous lawsuit brought forward by an attorney who's paying out-of-pocket expenses to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars. It simply does not happen. Not my words, Senator Newman's words. I encourage you to go listen April 15th, 2011, in the Senate Judiciary Committee. Members, this is the wrong thing to do. I encourage you to vote no.
Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, was that in regards to this bill, Scott Newman's testimony?
Representative Hillstrom.
Your Honor, no, it wasn't in specifically in regards to this bill. It was talking about these types of claims. It was talking about a portion of that cheeseburger bill that we all debated last year. And so these were his comments. And I made that very clear when I started.
Okay.
It was not about these bills, but it's about these kinds of claims.
Yeah, Mr. Representative, I just wanted to clarify that it wasn't in relationship to this. His testimony was not made in relationship to this bill.
Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick comment. I just want to just summarize, at least for myself, what I heard. I heard absolutely no evidence of a need for this bill. The only reason I heard for it is you, Representative Wardlow, your own self-logical analysis and the chamber's request for it, which does not seem sufficient, not to mention the fact that the effect would appear to be anti-consumer and anti-individual trying to seek justice. So I would certainly encourage a no vote on this.
All right. Representative Wardlow renews his motion that Senate file number 373, as amended, you recommend be voted to pass and sent to the General Register.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
And roll call has been requested. Okay. The committee legislative assistant will call the roll.
Representative Szymanski.
Aye.
Representative Mazurall.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Allen.
No.
Representative Diane Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Cornish.
Aye.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Kreisel.
Aye.
Representative Lane.
No.
Representative Lesch.
No.
Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Shoemaker.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
He's
absent. Representative Swazinski.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Aye.
Representative Wardlow.
Aye.
The Committee of Legislative Administrator will report the vote. All right, the vote on Senate File 373, as amended, is 10 aye, 8 no. The bill is passed.
Thank you,
Representative Wardlow. Next on the agenda is Senate File Number 530, as presented by Representative Mazurall. The chair would now like to bring Senate File 530 before the committee. Representative Mazurall, would you like to bring the motion to bring Senate File 350 before the Judiciary Committee?
Mr. Chair, I move passage of Senate File 530 and that it be sent to the General Register.
All right. Representative Mazurall, I understand there are amendments. There's an amendment to your bill.
Mr. Chair, no amendment from the Senate file.
Okay. Representative Mazurall.
I'm sorry, there is one item I think as a clarification I should propose as an amendment, and that's the effective date of this legislation.
All right. Does the our counsel of the Judiciary Committee have that amendment, and would you like to report the amendment? Mm-hmm. Ms. Perius.
Mr. Chair and members, this is an amendment to Senate File 530, the first engrossment, on page 3, line 25, delete 2011 and insert 2012, and on page 4, line 8, delete 2011 and insert 2012.
All right. Representative Mazurall, as amended, let us proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, this is a bill that passed through as House File 770 last year, passed through the House Civil Law Committee. What it effectively does is change the prejudgment interest rate for judgments over the amount of $50,000. In the past, or currently, that rate is 10%. And the rate for judgments under $50,000 is the one-year Treasury bill with a minimum of 4%. What this bill does is it moves all prejudgment interest rate to the rate of the one-year Treasury bill still with a minimum of 4%. The Senate file 530 also clarifies that state and political subdivisions are not affected by this legislation, so they are removed, and as is current law, this interest rate does not apply to breach of insurance contract, which has its own rates applicable to it. Post-judgment interest rate is not changed by this bill. For post-judgment interest rate, the amounts under $50,000 remain at the one-year Treasury bill rate with a minimum of 4%, but the bill retains the 10% amount for post-judgment interest for those judgments of $50,000 or more.
Thank you, Representative Mazzaro. Is there any one that would like to testify for or against Senate File 530? If so, please proceed to the testifiers table. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joel Carlson for the Association for Justice. Being significantly briefer this go-around. But I want you to know that this is item number 6 on the Tort Reform Boot Camp to reduce pre- and post-judgment interest. It is a priority for ALEC. That's where the bill came from. It is set at the rate that they asked for in the Tort Reform Boot Camp, except for Minnesota would keep it at a floor of 4%. I want you to know, when according to Munich Re, the insurance company that that compiles a nice list of all of the pre- and post-judgment interest rates around the country, that we will now, I believe, have the lowest rate of prejudgment interest in the country, or one of them. They all hover between 8% and 12%. Most of them hover between 8% and 12%, and this is unfair to consumers and only benefits the insurance companies that are paying this interest. And I can tell you that if you're involved in litigation, you are not borrowing money at 4%. When you're putting things on your credit card because you can't work and you can't make your payments, you're paying 16, 18, 22%. I opened a credit card of mine last night, the interest rate, and thankfully I didn't have a big balance, 27%. Now, during this whole time of litigation, while they can drag it out as long as they want, they keep their money and make whatever they can on it, and at the end of the day, they pay you 4%. That's what this bill does. It benefits no one but the insurance company. We urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Representative,
happy to answer questions.
Okay. Representative Johnson, you're on the list here.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mazzaro, when this matter was on the House floor for debate last year, you said something to the effect that all stakeholders agree to this change. Who are the stakeholders that have agreed to the change that you're proposing in this bill?
Representative Mazzaro.
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, the stakeholders are the cities and counties who were concerned about this legislation bootstrapping them into a higher interest rate than what they have currently, and the Minnesotans for lawsuit reform.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anybody else, or just those two?
Those are the two that I'm aware of. I'm sorry, Mr.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anybody else, or just those two?
Those are the two that I'm aware of. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson. Those are the two that I'm aware of.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Johnson.
To Mr. Carlson, a testifier, are there other stakeholders that could conceivably be interested in this matter?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I don't think anyone who would receive pre- or post-judgment interest was consulted on the matter, because we'd have a completely different opinion. You need to understand that these are cases where the person who is paying pre-judgment interest has either admitted their liability for causing this damage or has been found liable by a jury for causing this damage. These for sure are not frivolous cases. We're just saying that we're not going to make the insurance companies pay a reasonable rate of interest. These are clearly not frivolous cases at all. This just says that right now the law is at 10. It's a mid-range. It's where a lot of states are at. And And we're going to change that because they're asking us to change it down to four. And that clearly does not compensate consumers or individuals or businesses who are harmed through someone else's negligence.
Any further question, Representative Johnson? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, it was Representative Smith who originally changed the interest rate to 10%. I was on the bill with Representative Smith. We worked bipartisanly through the process. And basically what we, when we came to consensus, we agreed that people who had already been found to have done something wrong and who owed these people money should not get the benefit of dragging out paying the people who were harmed. So what you're saying is, if you've been harmed and somebody's already been found to have harmed you, it's either the court has determined it or they pled guilty, they pled that they did it, admitted they did it, you aren't going to get your money until they feel darn good and ready to get to pay, because they have no incentive. If you're letting them pay a very low amount of interest, sometimes, you know, people can just hang on, right? People are barely hanging on to get their money, and they're waiting for the award that the court has given them. They may be on the verge of losing their home, not being able to pay their bills. We know that a bankruptcy in this state is, the majority of time, is caused by medical bills, right? You haven't paid your medical bills. You have all of these expenses out there. And someone who has the ability to pay you is choosing not to pay you for a long time. And if that's the case, they should have to pay the interest. So I would encourage you to keep it at 10%. Again, it was a bipartisan proposal that put it there.
Mr. Chairman, can I just add one?
Mr. Carlson?
Just so it's not a nebulous concept here of interest, we have prejudgment interest for three main reasons. You know, to compensate you for the loss of use of your own money, which you've had to pay out, to promote prompt payment, because there is an interest that's accruing, and to prevent frivolous appeals. Since this has been in place since 2009, we have seen cases that used to get an automatic motion for a new trial, an appeal to the Court of Appeals. We have seen those diminish, not evaporate, but diminish, and this has an impact on the caseload for the judiciary. And we have certainly seen it. And there's no way that you cannot look at the case statistics and say that something isn't happening positive when cases are down so much, civil cases down so much over the past decade. Something positive is happening. And why is that? Things like this help take the caseload away, because there's absolutely no incentive to not settle and promptly pay it on a case. And so we think that this is working, and approving this bill, in addition to being unfair to consumers and a windfall to insurance companies, will increase the workload on the courts.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Carlson, I'm curious about that tort reform boot camp. Do you have to do push-ups there till you pass out?
Representative, or Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, that was a rhetorical question.
All right, Representative.
I'm guessing if I went there, I'd probably just pass out straight away with no push-ups.
I've seen the,
Mr. Carlson.
I've seen the facilities where they have the, where they hold the ALEC meetings, and I don't think you'd be passing out from push-ups. Something else, maybe.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Representative Lesh.
My question is, in light of Mr. Carlson's statement, and also with Representative Hillstrom's work with Representative Smith on the 10% bill, and I'm wondering, I didn't see a fiscal note on this bill. If we're seriously talking about increasing court action, because now I find out I'm liable, I admit or I'm found liable, and there's no real incentive for me to just drag out another appeal. It impacts the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court longer. Should there be a fiscal note on this bill then? And Representative Hillstrom, did you do that analysis when you moved to 10%? Mr. Chair?
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesh, it was a while ago, and I can't remember, but I certainly could go back in the file and take a look if there was any fiscal implications that were attributed to this bill.
Well, Representative Lesch.
It strikes me that in this somber age of fiscal austerity, we should be really looking keenly at every impact of each bill that has implications for the judiciary. I know that from my experience and Representative Cornish's work with the judiciary, I guess we fund them technically still, right? I can't remember what we switched around. We still fund the judiciary, I think, here, don't we? Okay. That this committee should be aware of all the impacts of court. So I'm wondering, Mr. Chair, if we might be able to hold this over until we find out what the impact is on the judiciary.
Representative Lesch will take that under advisement at this time, but we will, you know, the bill as presented at the judiciary, you know, we will verify if that there was no fiscal note attached at the time the bill was presented in the Senate.
Okay, well, Mr. Chair, I'm wondering, it's ironic that we're going to take it under advisement if I want something to be addressed and okay. Is going to be delayed until the point until after it passes on the floor. I think that's what this bill is potentially addressing, you getting a judgment and having absolutely no justice in the end. So I made my request, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Lesch. It is my understanding that there was no fiscal note attached to the Senate file. All right. Any other questions? All right, Representative Grunhagen.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen, please use your microphone.
Oh, yeah. What was the vote in the Senate, just for informational purpose?
Mr. Chair.
Representative. Pardon?
No, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mazeral.
Yeah, I have that vote at 64-1 in the Senate.
All right. Thank you, Representative Mazeral.
On the current Senate file 530.
Representative Liebling.
Mr. Chair, has a roll call been requested on this?
No roll call has been requested
on
this bill.
I'd like to request one.
So noted, a roll call has been requested on Senate File 530. Seeing no more discussion, we will move. Representative Mazeral will renew his motion that Senate File 530 pass as amended and be sent to the General Register.
I make that motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Mazeral. A roll call has been requested. The Committee Legislative Administrator will take the roll call.
Representative Szymanski.
Aye.
Representative Mazeral.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Allen.
No.
Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Champion.
No.
Representative Cornish.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Kreisel.
Aye.
Representative Lane.
No.
Representative Lesch.
No.
Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Shoemaker.
Aye.
Representative Smith is absent. Representative Swazinski.
Aye.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative Wardlow.
Aye.
Committee Legislative Assistant will report the tally of the roll call vote on Senate File 530. The roll call vote, 10 aye, 8 nay, on Senate File 530 is passed. Okay. For the members of the Judiciary Committee, our next meeting will be January 31st, 2012, 8:15 a.m. here in Room 10 of the State Office Building. The subject of our, please, we will adjourn here shortly. The subject of our next meeting will be the Legislative Auditor's Report on the 2nd Judicial District in Ramsey County. We will be hearing from the Legislative Auditor and the State Courts Administration. No other business before this committee. We are adjourned.